Are you a prepper or homesteader looking to connect with like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own preparedness group? Already have a group? Well, look no further than PrepperNet. PrepperNet is dedicated to personal responsibility, individual freedoms, and being self-reliant. PrepperNet has monthly meetings in over 100 cities where you can meet and learn with like-minded people in your area. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Find us online at PrepperNet.com.
Hey, welcome Prepping Academy listeners. Thank you for joining us today. I wanted to set this interview up because I made some mistakes in the interview, and I'm interviewing Margie Wildcraft from the Grow Network, and she's going to be telling everyone about this free 10-part masterclass that's going to happen April 27th and 28th. It's streaming on both days, the 27th and 28th. Some of the classes that are going to be free that you can sit and watch are how to grow half your food in a backyard, food preservation, beginning foraging, how to grow medicinal herbs, how to buy the right property, how to build soil and compost for a better, you know, soil to grow your food in. Home butchering. She said this was kind of messy and kind of bloody, but this is a 10-part series masterclass, and she's got experts going to be teaching these classes, and it's going to be offered April 27th and 28th only. And you can get information on this by going to preppernet.com/skills. That is preppernet.com/skills.
Survive. Thrive. Stay alive. It's time to get prepared with the Prepping Academy podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome to Prepping Academy. I am Forrest, your host this evening, and we have a very special guest. You guys have known her forever. She's probably the oldest name in prepping. She's been doing it forever. She's kind of like the founder of the movement almost. But this is Margie Wildcraft. She founded the Grow Network in 2009, and she's been like the base, moving the movement forward for 15 years now. And we have her live. We got a lot of questions for her, but I know I can't give you literally the platform to introduce yourself. I mean, and to build you up. I just can't do it. You've got so many, you're an author, you've done everything. So hit the highlights of what you think you've accomplished, and which you have. I'm not saying
yeah,
thing,
yeah, but yeah,
you're,
no, just yeah.
You're an icon.
Well, thank you. Yeah, if you do anything long enough, I imagine you're going to collect a few accolades. Yes. I think some of the name recognition stuff, if that's important to you, is National Geographic used me as an expert in off-grid living. I've hosted Mother Earth News fairs and as well as their online homesteading summits. Reuters recognized me. There was an article that my team submitted about my work, and we won. So that was wonderful. Sent my editor for a week to London. She said, "Do you want to go, Margie? It's all about you." And I said, "No, I have no interest in going there for that. You know, that's all good. It's going to be all on journalism." I'm like, "Forget it." But I think the thing that I'm most proud of actually is having, you know, raised two kids and able to grow my own food and able to be able to help people and serve. You know, I just I do get tired. Now, that is true, because this business is not a very profitable one. I will tell you that. But, you know, it's so rewarding. Just this morning downstairs, I'm in a rental house. Actually, I've been moving like every 6 or 8 weeks. I have 6 or 8 months. I haven't found a place here. I live in Puerto Rico, and I just, for whatever reason, I'm thinking the universe might want me to be setting up all these backyards. But, you know, I was eating handfuls of cherry tomatoes and pulled up a couple of squashes and check on all my rabbits and planting some more trees. And, you know, being able to grow food and having that kind of a sense of security is, I think that's a huge accomplishment, right? It's not anything that's going to come with paper or acknowledgement, but it's something that gets you through life in a way that has you go through with a lot less stress. Let's just say that.
Yep. You got to have food, you got to have water, and you got to have love. You know, you got to, there's some basics in life you just got to have. So, but as we were, before we went live, I was telling her, I looked up my first purchase of, it's called Grow Your Own Food. Mm-hmm. It was a DVD series back in the day of DVDs. It was April 8th, 2014. It was first time I purchased, and I had a big garden, and I was learning. I watched some things. I mean, you can't wear a DVD out, but I almost did.
We used to have people that organized study groups on that, mm-hmm. that DVD, and they would watch a segment. There's 10 segments in it, and they would watch one segment a week and then, you know, talk about what the local resources were. And I was just so touched. I mean, really, thousands and thousands of people. That thing somehow got on the internet in a digital form, which I didn't know about as the owner. And there were like 500,000 illegal downloads back. Do you remember when there were torrent sites?
Oh, yes.
All these movies. Yeah.
Yep.
And I was really angry for about 2 hours. And I said, well, you know, yeah. Being angry isn't going to do me any dang good. So I might as well just get over that. And I guess that's an acknowledgement that people really liked the material and used it and got a lot out of it. So like I said, this business has never been very lucrative, but it's sure been rewarding.
So that's been 10 years ago, and I paid $33.55 with shipping.
Wow. Yeah. That like actually was released. Note. Yeah. That's like that. We released that in 2009.
And, okay. Oh, did you really? Yeah. Okay. So I was late. Then I bought one late. About raising rabbits. And I told you everything I know. Everyone in PrepperNet knows that I raise rabbits. I teach classes on rabbits to just PrepperNet, you know, members when we do. I never teach at any shows or anything, but I bought my first DVD from you on how to process, how to grow rabbits, and learned everything about rabbits from you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Rabbits are like the most awesomest food source ever. Mm-hmm. And I do this one presentation on how to grow half your own food in your backyard in less than an hour a day. And people are like, wait, I'm like, no, that's actually, it's about a half an hour a day. I do it. I've been doing this for years, and we've mm-hmm. taught now, you know, millions of people to do that. And I know of hundreds of thousands that have been implemented, but rabbits are the cornerstone of course, it's a small garden, you know, maybe 100-square-foot garden. And then of course chickens, cause the eggs are so prolific, but the real calories. And the hardest thing to produce in a backyard is fat and protein and the macronutrient. And if you think about it, there are no fatty vegetables in a garden. Right. Fat is really, really hard to produce. Now, we've had this fat phobic whatever thing going on for the last, I don't know how many decades, but fat's really, really vitally important. And you can, I tend to procrastinate on my butchering, which I think everybody does because nobody likes that part of it. But so my rabbits tend to get fat, and I'm like happy about that because I'm looking for the fat, but they are the lion's share. You can produce a huge, huge amount of calories just with meat animal product. Actually, who was I was talking to? Do you know Engineer 777 Scott Hunt?
Yeah, Scott Hunt. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I was talking to him just recently, and he said, you know, Marjorie, when you first showed me about rabbits and how important meat and livestock is, he said, in the beginning, I had all these gardens, I had all this stuff. And he said, now all I have are like rabbits and chickens and hogs. He's got a bigger spread, you know, he's got yep. some bigger animals. And he says, and that's it. And he said, and I can tell you that it works. I've been living off of this diet for, you know, years now. And, I'm healthy and strong and fine, and I'm getting all the nutrition I need, and I'm growing it all here, and it's the easiest system ever. And I'm like, thank you, Scott. That's what I've been telling people.
So I remember once I was doing I told people in PrepperNet that I could I can take a rabbit from a cage to the grill in a minute and 30 seconds. And they're like, what? And so I remember I showed them the DVD that I learned from you or how to raise rabbits. And this was at least 8 years ago. And so I literally grabbed a rabbit out of a cage, and I processed with, I did kind of break the law. I didn't know this because we were at a state park. You're not supposed to do that at a state park, but we're not going to say that out loud. But, and I had that thing ready to go on the grill in less than a minute and 30 seconds. And I was teaching the class. So rabbits, best source of meat, easiest. I think it's much easier than like a processing a chicken or bigger animals. And
it
I
sure
think
is. Yeah.
Pound for pound is probably the best meat, except my rabbits. I mean, I don't let mine get, I guess, as fat as yours do. There's mm-hmm. I lack the fat when you do rabbits. So I always tell people, if you're going to do rabbits and live off rabbits, you got to mix in a possum every now and then.
You got to have some fat. Yeah, you sure do. Rabbits are awesome. And if I can bring up the main distinction why, mm-hmm. and that's, so we're, you know, as a prepper, I love talking to preppers, right? You guys are fine. Like, I can go hardcore with you and you're not going to be offended, right? But so when the grocery stores close, the feed stores are going to close, right? Mm-hmm. And I've had a lot of people and even knowledgeable, well-intentioned people living out in the country. And they said, well, we're going to all eat our chicken. And I said, no, you aren't. And they said, what do you mean? I said, well, where are you going to get the chicken feed? Because right. I did for years, you know, our family, when we were homesteading and the kids mm-hmm. were little, we'd get the box of chickens, you know, the baby chicks in the mail, mm-hmm. cheep, 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 the post office, come get these things. You know, like, okay, I'll be right there. And we'd raise them up over 3 months and process them, 2 or 3 months and process them. And then we'd have, you know, free range organic chicken in the freezer for the whole year for the family. But that took an enormous amount of feed. I mean, we were regularly go getting 50-pound bags of this and 50-pound bags of that, especially toward the end when they're really bulking up. Rabbits are herbivores. And so it's actually fairly easy to come up with a diet for them that does not involve a feed store. Mm-hmm. So, yep. You know, different grasses, different forbs. Here I'm living in the tropics where there's these leguminous trees like gandules or lucayena, comfrey, which grows everywhere. They love comfrey. You know, lots and lots of weeds. And they basically eat a bunch of stuff that we don't eat. Mm-hmm. Like chickens, because they're omnivores, they are going to compete with you for food sources that you might want, like grains or vegetables or things. Whereas rabbits are going to turn that landscape of yours into protein and fat, and there's not a lot of conflict of interest there. They also, you know, in the wintertime when you're pruning your fruit trees, they love that bark, you know, that you can chop up. I went to a pet store one time and they had this bag with these little bitty 3-inch sticks of peach tree trimming, mm-hmm. and they were selling it for like $4 or something like that. I thought, oh my goodness. I didn't even realize like there's another marketing possibility, but to me it was like, oh my gosh, I should be feeding all of my, my trimmings to the rabbit, and rabbits love it. And they love that, green bark. So, there's all kinds of food sources. And then the other great thing about rabbits is they breed like rabbits.
Like it's their job.
Yeah, they're great. They really are.
You know, when I bring people over, a lot of people, because I talk about the rabbits a lot, they always ask me, hey, you gonna breed rabbits? So I want to see that, what you're talking about when the rabbit faints or whatever, falls over. And I'm like,
oh, the male, the buck. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
clearly having a good time there.
Yeah. So
the doe is like, what just happened?
Yeah, I know. And, you know, I got some bucks that aren't very smart. And mm-hmm. you've got to literally turn the female.
Oh, yeah, they go for the head. Yeah,
yeah,
they're on the head. They're like, no, buck, you got to, it's the other end, you know.
Yep. Yeah. So you've been known as like the leader of the prepping, survival, homestead movement, preparedness movement. And you were a corporate lady. And then all of a sudden you kind of was propelled in this movement and became the leader of it. I mean, how'd you go to corporate lady to the founder, the leader, the female movement of preparedness and survival?
Yeah. Well, I grew up in South Florida and my family was kind of poor. So I was always very, very interested in money. And I always wanted to live overseas. So I got a degree in electrical engineering. and managed to get a job overseas with Motorola in Hong, based in Hong Kong, managing cellular telephone networks. And while I was there, some friends said, "Hey, Marjorie, you know, you should go take this class from this guy named Robert. It's all about wealth." And I thought, "Well, do we know anything about Robert?" And they're like, "Yeah, I don't know. We never heard of him." But and I'm like, "I'm kind of open minded. Why not? Let's check it out." So I go, and this guy Robert just blows my mind with all these concepts I'd never heard of. And and long story short, over the next several years, I ended up quitting engineering, and I chose Austin, Texas as a market to, you know, buy and sell and do real estate investment. And that business was so successful that Robert reached out to me and said, "Hey, Marjorie, would you be a testimonial on our infomercials?" And I said, "Sure." And that's how for 4 years I was on every day and night for Robert Kiyosaki, Rich Dad Poor Dad.
I was wondering if it was Kiyosaki.
Yes, it was. So Robert was, and I'd built it, and things were going great. We were making a ton of passive income and having a great time. And I started volunteering on a project, and, you know, I like to be involved in my community no matter where I am. Right. And, I thought this was just, I had no idea that this thing was going to completely turn my life upside down and upend everything that I had done at that point in time in my life. It was a project to get locally grown organic food into an elementary school. And I was homeschooling my kids and had no intention of sending them to the school, but that was such a good project. I thought I'd contribute energy to it. And that project was a complete and utter failure. And the primary, and I'll never forget, the third meeting we had, we're in the Red Rock Community Center, and you know this terrible metal folding chairs, you're wondering if they're going to hold you up, and the chipped formica tables and the whole scene there, fluorescent lights. And we, everybody wanted it. We thought for sure it was, you know, the principal, the students, the teachers, like it, people who eat good quality food, whether you're a child or an adult, they score higher on intelligence tests. They're generally for children, they have less behavioral problems. The same is true for adults. We don't quite measure that much. But, you know, you're just generally overall a better person if you eat high quality food. Mm-hmm. And there's reams of studies to back that up. And the biggest problem with this project was, and this is a little bit southeast of Austin, Texas, so kind of a progressive area, right? Mm-hmm. There were not enough local organic farmers to provide even part of the vegetables for one small rural elementary school. And I just was stunned when we realized that, because between me and everybody there, we knew pretty much a lot of the organic farmers in Texas. And I actually started shaking physically, which for hours that night I would shake. In fact, I was the one who organized the room, and I had a really hard time getting the chairs back under the table and locking the door and turning off the lights because I was shaking so violently. Fortunately, my husband drove me home, because I knew there was only 4 days worth of food supply in the grocery stores at any given time, that food travels just in time, you know, 1,500 miles. And then I was surrounded by about 20 million Texans who are armed to the teeth.
Right.
And I said, "Wow, this is a situation that could get out of hand really, really fast. Actually, this is a situation that no amount of money will get you out of." Like, right. I've done really well with wealth and money and figuring all that out. And then the universe popped this new thing up on me of, you know, wealth is not money. And I just kept in my mind, I kept thinking, you know, farmers come from gardeners. We have to completely redo the entire food supply. Like, it is completely and utterly broken. And it starts with backyard food production. In fact, I was just having a conversation with Jim Gale over Food Forest Abundance. And I was saying, look, you cannot have a local food shed with only, or, you know, everybody wants a local food shed, right? Yeah. Let's support the farmers. Let's support the farmers. Well, the reality is that if we don't have about 75% of the population also doing backyard food production to help round out, then they're not going to make it. The farmers can't do it. And the reason is genetics, because they don't have time. You know, like I was chatting with you before, a side business that I'm looking at here is, I'm here in Puerto Rico. love rabbits, of course. And there's rabbits here that most of, oh, I would say all of the rabbits here have been raised in cages their entire lives for many, many generations. And finding a breed of rabbit that eats a lot of forage and that is, you know, healthy and strong and resists different diseases and things is a very, very valuable asset. And I got started on this project, and I'm in touch with a lot of the regenerative farmers on the island, and they actually said, yeah, please do this. We had rabbits. We tried that system because I have them on the rabbit tractor with the open bottom so they can access the ground, because, you know, you don't have to buy anywhere near as much food and eventually can grow all their food from. And I've actually had farmers that live, we tried it. They just got sick or they died. We couldn't, you know, it takes time. It takes somebody time to like work with them, figure it out, get the right genetics, develop the genetics. And the same thing is true for all of our heirloom varieties, all our heirloom vegetables. They were all created by your great, 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 great grandparents. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have Google. A lot of them did not know how to read and write. But and we can't count on universities and multinational corporations to have any interests of ours in mind. So anyway, that's a little bit of a long way around. But yeah, and I took a lot of flack for it, honestly, because, you know, that was like 2003 or so when I first had that epiphany. And I said, I sold the real estate investment business, and we bought the land in Texas, and I started homesteading and taking every class and learning everything. And I'm like, you guys, this system is wired to implode, and not in a good way. And like, and then once you start seeing, as you know, with PrepperNet, and once you start seeing one vulnerability, then you, all of a sudden, you know, EMP, you know, nuclear strike, you know, truckers, whatever, you know, there's just so many of them. They only plant like one or two varieties of corn. Like, you'd have to have some kind of rust or something could wipe out the entire corn crop in the U.S. Mm-hmm. When you start looking, you're like, oh my God, you know, you better get prepared. But, you know, this is 2003, 2004. And one of my sisters-in-law, really, really, really wonderful lady, but she classic Texan, and I'm going to try and do my best I can with her accent. She was like, Marjorie, this is the United States of America. Mm-hmm. And we ain't never going to have any supply chain problems. There are never going to be empty shelves on the grocery store, girlfriend. You are something like that. Crazy, you know? And I'm like, yeah, I know, but I know what I know. And I you know, I just can't sleep at night. And I have, you know, so I just kept doing it. And then, you know, when 2008 came around and when in 2020 and these things have been happening, people are like, oh yeah, this really is a good idea. So that's how I got started. Was I was just volunteering on a project and realized the dire situation that we live in and said, I've got to do something about this. So,
you know, one of the things you brought up seeds, and, you know, back, you know, 200 years ago, there was no store you could go and buy seeds. They were all handed to your neighbors or whatever the seeds, and you had to harvest them. And now pretty much if you take the heirloom seed, you know, production, put it to the side, every single seed is absolutely owned and controlled. Farmers are told what they can plant, when they can plant it, how much they can plant. And thank goodness that we do have some people. I don't know, 50 years ago when the seeds started becoming a monopoly from the few different companies, and they, you know, they got the heirloom seeds and kept them kind of as pure as they can. Without that, that would be frightening if we didn't have heirloom seeds today.
Well, you know, we have lost, and again, this is why backyard food production is so critical, is that I think it was the USDA actually and did something good. They did a study comparing seed catalogs in, I believe it was 1899, with seed catalogs in 1999. And they found some unbelievable, like 90-something percent of all the vegetable varieties were no longer in existence. We've lost huge amounts of genetics. And, you know, the last big push, as you mentioned, World War II and the Victory Gardens was the last big push for growing food. And, yeah, we've lost so much It's just incredible. And then the places where they are gathering them, I mean, God bless the Seed Savers Exchange, and they've been doing a really good job. But they send a copy of all those seeds up to Svalbard, which is owned by Bill Gates and a bunch of other people who know the value of genetics. So anyway, seeds are super important. Like, go buy some seeds and develop seeds, you know. People, you know, I'm getting older, you're getting older, and you think, wow, you know, it is happening. I hope. They haven't gotten that age reversal thing. They're working on it, and they'll probably have it next week.
So you've been doing this for 15 years. There's been a lot of changes.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them have to be good in the preparedness arena, and some of them have to be probably bad. I mean, how do you see over time the 15 years? I mean, I'm sure you've probably been thinking about this probably more than that, but it's actually been more than 15 years. You've been doing this for 20 something years.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would say the hardest thing that I saw was, especially in 2008, in that time period, mm-hmm. was the marketing with, you know, it was a hot thing to do preparation, and these marketers would come up with this really scary fear porn stuff. Man, they had some great fear porn, actually. I tell you, the Washington Post in 2020, hands down, had way better fear porn than anybody I've ever seen. I was thinking I should give them an award for their coverage of the whole COVID experience. But yeah, the prepper community has had some really, really rough times with, you know, marketers that have come in and taken advantage of people that are afraid, and they sell them a lot of stuff, you know, and they're like, Martyr, you should do this, and you should upsell and cross sell. And I'm like, hey, that's not what I'm about. I'm really trying to build a community. I think the other thing is that the general awareness, like, nobody calls me crazy anymore.
Right.
You know, right. They're like, oh, you know, I can't believe it when I run into people, because I really just am living my life. You know, I'm not thinking I'm anybody that different. And I'll be in a feed store or at a, you know, livestock event or something. Oh my God, you're Marjorie Wildcraft. And I'm like, yeah, I think I am. So I guess he is kind of like Joel Salatin. He's one of the most humble guys ever, and he's still just a farmer, you know, but everybody knows him, you know. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
What's the biggest threat you see to our food supply right now? Hey, let's take a quick break.
Has your data been hacked? Do you feel uneasy about the vulnerability of your personal information online? Were you involved in the Target, LinkedIn, or Microsoft data leaks? Don't know? If not, then pay attention. Join Forrest Garvin from PrepperNet for a free webinar on privacy and security. Gain insights into safe internet browsing, VPNs, crafting online aliases, secure emails, detecting if your data has been hacked, and managing passwords. Secure your spot today for this webinar on privacy and security. It's free. This webinar delves into comprehensive strategies for bolstering your online privacy. We've got you covered, from fortifying your passwords to shielding your financial information and mastering state-of-the-art encryption techniques. We're offering two convenient dates to suit your schedule. Reserve your spot now at preppernet.com/privacy. Don't let cyber threats erode your peace of mind any longer. Take the first step toward a safer, more secure online experience by joining us for our free webinar. Remember, knowledge is power when it comes to safeguarding your privacy. Sign up now at preppernet.com/privacy. We'll see you there.
Yeah, I see a famine coming very soon. It's been orchestrated. In 2015, so you started to learn to watch those. I think John Podesta organizes these things, these scenarios. Like in 2019, they did a scenario that, there'd be a global pandemic, and voila, it rolled out just exactly event 2201, right? It rolled out. So in 2015, and I was not as aware of how important it was to pay attention to these scenarios, but I'm in the space, so I'm kind of watching it. And it was organized by Cargill, and Cargill is the world's largest privately held company. Mm-hmm. They have their fingers in every aspect of feeding humanity, basically every aspect of it, processing, growing, delivering, packaging, everything. Cargill is friggin' huge. And they organized this thing called the food chain reaction crisis. And the scenario was that in 2020, something big happened on the planet, like maybe a pandemic.
Yep.
And then over the next coming years, there was this problem with weird, freaky, oh, because of climate change, it was all this weird, freaky weather stuff. And then there was all these accidents, and food went from a baseline cost to at least 400%. And over the decade, and of course, you know, millions upon millions died of starvation, especially in countries where you're only living on a few dollars a day. And there was just global violence everywhere, because when you don't eat, people do get violent. And then the end of the scenario, which I never understood, how could that happen? Like, they said, okay, and at the end of the decade, cooperation won the day and the global carbon tax fixed everything. And I kept thinking,
what
do you mean? How does a global carbon tax fix people not having food to eat? You know, like, but sure enough, you know, now more and more, you know, you do a search on an airline on Google and they'll tell you how many kilograms of carbon was needed for that flight or whatever. And companies are now buying and selling carbon credit, and they're really pushing this carbon agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And they're orchestrating a famine. And I really think now in that scenario for 2015, which is rolling out exactly as they, and by the way, the websites, they took the website down. You can still find little bits of trailers and little bits of information if you just do a search for, you know, food chain reaction and see that they did do that. And it's pretty much rolling out on schedule as they had talked about. I wish I'd have dove more into it at the time and pulled more information and data out. But again, you know, I wasn't as clued into the importance of those scenarios back in 2015. Now I pay attention to all of them, right? We got the cyber polygon. We're all waiting for that one, right? The cyber attack with the grid down. And, you know, it's just like, okay, that's coming. I think, yeah, we're definitely headed into a famine. And here's some data points so you can look at it. So we have had all kinds of anomalies in food production. A lot of them, I believe, are intentional warfare. The most recent is at Million Acres in Texas. Those were not natural fires. Those were created by directed energy weapons. It's a million acres. That area that they burned was where 85% of Texas, which is the largest beef producer in the U.S., is. So they basically just decimated the beef supply in this country. And even if the cows survived, they don't have any, you know, like, this is not a good thing. Europe has been doing some very interesting things. You've probably seen some of the farmers there, and some of the footage is kind of fun. Like, they got this hose and they're spraying down Parliament with cow shit, and
right,
you know,
yeah.
And you're like, yeah. Well, actually, there are way, way more protests than they're talking about, and they did it first with the farmers in the Netherlands. And the Netherlands is a huge, for being a little tiny country, it's like this huge producer of meat and milk and dairy products. And they just made so many crazy laws that it was they could no longer farm. And that's why they were driving their tractors into town. Right. So they doubled the tariffs on fertilizer, and they said, well, when you dispose of a tire, you have to pay for the disposal the moment you buy it, which, you know, quadruples the cost of the tire. You know, they just kept doing that, and the farmer couldn't farm. And that's why they were protesting. And then it spread all over the EU, and each country had different regulations, but they basically, the legislators of each country made it impossible for the farmers to farm. And so many of those farmers, like, their backs are up against the wall. That's all they've been doing for their whole life, multi-generational often. And now their ability to farm is being taken away from them by their governments. And they're angry, and they're not just spraying stuff. They're actively stopping trains that come in that have grain and dumping it on the ground, or any trucks that are moving that have any food in it. I mean, because they know that the population when the population gets hungry enough, within 4 to 6 months after a big famine, then your government governments get changed. they ain't gonna put up with that. So the farmers are, and this is really brilliant how I believe there's a global cult that is managing all this. It's really brilliant how they have structured it. So they got humans pitted against humans to do the dirty work of creating the famine there. And we're all watching this and we're going, well, that's Europe, you know, which is not a good attitude to take, but it is way over there. Well, a couple of weeks ago in Oregon, hundreds of small farms got cease and desist letters, and Oregon legislators just changed some laws, made something totally undoable, you know, like, oh, but if you're a small farm, well, you can meet the criteria if you invest $100,000 in this equipment, which no small farmer is going to do. Nobody has that money. So they basically shut down. And then there was so much outrage. I think they've reversed that now, but I promise you they're going to resurface. And we said, well, that might just be Oregon, which is just kind of a weird state anyway. And lo and behold, Maine shuts down 50, condemns 50 farms. And this was almost entrapment. No, it wasn't almost. It was entrapment. The composted human feces from almost every city, it's composted now. It's called biosludge, which honestly, I think it's kind of a good way to deal with human manure. I mean, you know, think about it. There's a lot of waste coming out of a city. What do you do with it? Except for that, it's full of every, like you think about your local hospital or, you know, your industry or your aunt. You know, Julia,
all the drugs and everything that's come through
all the drugs, yeah, and everything, you know, like, oh, I don't need this, I just throw it down the toilet. So though those biosludge are filled with heavy metals and with all kinds of chemicals and all kinds of pharmaceuticals, and it's just this huge nasty mix, and they sell it actually as like organic compost, and the FDA and the USDA has said, no, this is fine, it's safe. You don't need to worry about it. So the, in Maine, they encouraged a lot of farmers to use this, and they gave it to them for free. I think they said, here, you know, there's this wonderful. And then they came back and they condemned those farms because they have PFAS, the forever chemicals in it. And we're like, okay. So there is a war on our food supply, and there is a famine being orchestrated. I think we also have the other problem of hyperinflation. And like, that's coming, right? Yeah, I'm sure you've talked about BRICS and gold and silver and the overspending and the amount of trillions of dollars they go through. And they aren't even telling us how many trillions. There's actually way more, you know, when that hits, you aren't going to be able to afford to buy food. And the reasons governments topple pretty quickly thereafter is what government employee is going to continue working when a month's wages buys them, you know.
So let me ask you this question.
A day's food. Yeah.
Why does Bill Gates own 19 farms in North Carolina?
Wow. Yeah. He's the largest private landowner in the United States.
He owns 19 farms. Why is he buying? He's not coming out here with his tractor. And why does he own them? That kind of bothers me. And I'm sure he owns farms in probably all 50 states at this time. But why is Bill Gates the master of chaos when it comes to food production, and wants us, him and Jeff Bezos, they want us to eat Bezos. Yeah, they want us to eat crickets and not grow meat anymore.
Bezos has just announced he's going to invest $1 billion in lab grown meat because we don't need animals. Gates has been behind the research, and they absolutely can do this. Now the University of California has confirmed it. It's put vaccines into lettuce and I believe spinach. Like they can, like, what? Yeah, like, you gotta be kidding me. Yeah, I don't, you know, and he's buying up all kinds of farmland. I mean, if I had more money in it, I've got good fertile farmland, I'd be buying farmland too.
So one of the articles you sent me was like, you said there's going to be a vanilla bean shortage. And I'm like, wait, ice cream? Joe Biden can't get his ice cream. But my wife makes vanilla extract from the beans. You know, I think you put vodka in there and vanilla, and over time it makes the extract. And she's like, what? It's going to go. So, I mean, and then there's bird flu. There's all kind
of, oh, they're starting to pull the bird flu out. You know, that may be what they do here next. I just saw an article this morning that, you know, they found bird, and I think it was in North Carolina. They found bird flu has switched over and now it's attacking cows. So that may be the thing that they use to try and shut down food production here in the United States. To go back to Europe. So how many of those farmers do you think are going to be planting or growing things, or, you know, certainly not much meat is going to come out of the Netherlands anymore.
Right.
The Ukraine, which is a huge bread basket,
mm-hmm.
huge bread guy. Well, I don't know. They're starting to like recruit handicapped people, older people. They've killed their male, you know, strength workforce. They're cannon fodder. Those boys are all dead.
Mm-hmm.
Those farms are burned out. I mean, they're estimating that Ukraine will only produce about 5% of what they're normally capable of.
Wheat and rye. I mean, all, you know, mostly wheat yeah. and corn and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. They are a huge producer. Yeah. So that's going to go all offline. Yeah. And, you know, here in the U.S., we have these crazy at the last minute, you know, either a crazy wind or a crazy drought or a crazy rain or something, you know, some sort of weather event that's orchestrated. And so I think it's actually a miracle that food prices have not gone right. up that much.
And I know,
And
I know in China, they had all the flooding, was it last year, a couple years ago, that destroyed all their crops. And that's why China, for the first time, is like importing more food than they've ever imported.
Yeah. China has actually never really been food self-reliant. But the one who's been closest to it is Russia, has been close to food self-reliant. I haven't looked at this in a few years, but China's been a huge importer. Mm-hmm. of grain for a long, long time, and from the U.S., from the United States. So that's going to be, I think that's another thing they're working on. I think China really wants to take Taiwan back, mm-hmm. and quite a few reasons, most financially because of the semiconductor industry. I think mm-hmm. it's some crazy number, like 84% of all the semiconductors are made in Taiwan. Like, mm-hmm. that's yeah. insane, right? Like, yep. yeah, you aren't going to have the chips for your smartphone anymore, right? Your electronics. But even more importantly, so I've been to Taiwan and China. Like I said, I lived in Southeast Asia for a while. And during the Cultural Revolution in China, they got the young people all riled up and they had them destroy, just like they're doing here, you know, destroy those statues and burn those books and everything that was old. They said, let's get rid of it. And a bunch of it was siphoned out to Taiwan for safekeeping. And so now that almost everything in China has been destroyed and they've kind of calmed down from that, they're like, hey, could we have that back? And the Taiwanese are like, no. I mean, really, they have this, they've a lot of it stored in a mountain, interestingly. And I've just huge collection. I've gotten to see only a tiny part of it, just huge collection of beautiful vases and calligraphy and just the talent of you know, millennia of Chinese. So there's not only that, but then in Taiwan is also the second largest seed collection on earth is, I believe it's a vegetable seed collection. So there's a lot of prizes for anybody who takes over Taiwan. And there's a lot of like, well, so clearly the Ukraine is going to have to surrender, or something's going to have to end there. That didn't work out. There's definitely not a win. And now the U.S. is getting involved with this whole Israeli thing. We got a lot of forces over there, you know, and the U.S. is getting its butt handed to itself. And, you know, could it actually defend Taiwan anymore? Probably not. Mm. So, you know,
so this
we're
is
about
a
question. To look at a huge geopolitical mess.
Yeah. Yes. So I don't know the answer to this, but I'm hoping maybe you do. But why are governments in general against farmers, self-reliance people, and homesteaders? Why are they? It's like almost no matter what nation. We've been talking about, yeah. you know, but why is that?
All right, I will tell you why, and I okay. know because I've spent 20 years trying to encourage people to grow food. It's just such a beautiful activity. It's so health-giving. It's so healing and so grounding. You know, it solves so many problems, right? And why aren't people doing it? I believe that there is a global cult that manages Earth, right? And they have actually been in power for many millennium, as far as I can tell now. And we're all trying, there's a whole group of people trying to understand real human history. Everything that I've learned in school is absolutely manufactured. Let's just say that. But so as far as I can tell, it's 12,000 years ago, they came And then they've put different humans in charge here. But this planet is managed and controlled by a group. And we are livestock. We are animals, and disposable. And they do not want us too creative or too strong or too self-reliant because, you know, I mean, as a livestock manager, Joel Salatin and I were having a conversation. We want hens that are smart, but to be able to defend themselves and do good and be good layers, but we don't want them too smart to figure out that they could just hop over that fence,
They do.
And I think that conversation is starting to be had more and more and more. And people used to think I was crazy, or, you know, I used to think I was crazy for thinking this. I did an interview with a woman named Max Lowen. I met her in February I was at Anarchapulco in Mexico. And she happened to be they had this one small hotel where all of us presenters and speakers were. She was a presenter. And I'm like, hey, Max, what are you presenting on? I'm kind of like backyard food production. What do you do? And she goes, I'm an SRA survivor. And I said, well, I love that survivor thing. I'm like, I'm all into survival. What is SRA? And she goes, satanic ritual abuse. And I'm like, oh, yeah, right. And I did an interview with her telling her story. And she was absolutely involved with from a baby in Rome in the depths of the Vatican. They do horrendous things. And then, you know, she said the highest levels on this planet are Satanist. CEOs and presidents and all of that they are. And I'd be more than happy to give you her information if you want to have an interview with her. Shocking and eye opening. And so, you know, I'm doing this series now called the Wartime Homefront Skills, because you need to have skills to at home, right? You want to make it through home. And people are like, well, war. And I'm like, well, you pick whatever war you want. There's the Ukrainian one, the Gaza one, the war on poverty, the war on drugs, whatever. But really, it's humanity, humans fighting for humanity. And more and more people are starting to understand that this global cult does exist and that they're real, and that that really is the threat, that they have intentionally created toxic food and a financial system that just basically is like leeches bleeding you in every possible way they can, or a school system that is designed to make our children good, compliant factory workers or consumers. They have a medical system that's actually sadistic, and that actually is fully intends to do harm and is more interested in financial gain than health. I could go on and on. And government, I mean, they own the governments. Like they put, you know, people talked about Biden and Trump, and like Trump is just one of the actors. He's getting to play this role right now that kind of looks like he's a hero for the right. But he's don't ever forget, he was a reality show star, you know, like right. They own all of those people. Like for a while, I was trying to get my book. I was really working. I kept visualizing a New York Times bestseller, and you're getting the message out and da da da. You don't get on the top of a music chart or a book chart unless there is some other agenda behind that. You can listen to some of the pop stars and stuff talk about the backside of the music industry, and you'll realize that this is very, very, very fully controlled, as is every other system.
And so you say in your series, it's free for everyone.
Yeah.
And it's coming soon, right? Is it the end of this month?
Yeah. It's streaming April 27th and 28th. It's that weekend. And we have 10 episodes going up, and I really just selected the most critical skills. And I got to tell you, I grew up in the South, right? And I was always doing sports, and my coach he was a Civil War buff, and we'd go to all these battlefields in Georgia and Tennessee and Kentucky and Florida and wherever. And I was always like, well, that's really a nice cannon and a nice statue and all that, but what did the women and children do? And nobody, you know, we don't write history about that. But that's actually what wins wars, is, you know, people who are able to fill their belly and fight or whatever you got to do, right? But, you know, people to take care of you when you get shot or what, you know. But the home front is where the wars are won. So anyway, I put together the essential skills, right? You need a lot. We all need a lot. You know, as you know, as a prepper, it never ends. Skills and the stuff you need.
Always learning.
These are the essential ones. So I have one there on backyard food production. I do go into rabbits on that, you'll know.
Okay.
We have another one on food preservation. So Jill Winger and I, between the two of us, 45 years of homesteading experience, and we go over 9 different ways that we use food preservation. We talk about what works and what doesn't work and what you shouldn't waste your money on, what we use all the time. And then foraging for beginners, Scott Sexton. I love his accent. Oh, yeah. He's from Arkansas. He's a wonderful forager and teaches some basics. How to grow and use 12 medicinal herbs. I got to do an interview with Dr. Kai-Fu Lee. He's a world's expert on artificial intelligence, and got to do an interview with him on the future of food and AI. So we did one on roadkill and home butchering.
Wait, did you say roadkill?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, because you know, like it's found meat, it's organic, free range meat. You know, like why are you passing that up?
That's interesting. You do hit rabbits. What other do you hit topics like? You know, water purification, because that's part of, I mean, food system as well.
You're right. I had to limit it to like 10. Okay. Though. We didn't want to overwhelm people. I mean, if really, you know, the entire grow network, everything we've ever created for years would be the best thing to do, but
you'd put
people way into overwhelm. And so, I think food, you know, water is definitely crucial, but food and, you know, the calorie is going to become a unit of currency. It's almost there, you know. We haven't, as Americans, we haven't got any living memories of that. Although that was, during the Great Depression. And then actually in 1914, before World War I, there were food riots in the U.S. People were having a hard time getting food. So it's a thing. So food is really, really important, food and medicine. So that's what this mostly focuses on. And it's just a great package to really get you ramped up and understanding and being able to do stuff right away. It's all focused on people who have no experience and that maybe they're older and out of shape, because that's what, you know, the average American is. So
one day that grocery store is not going to be open, and people are going to find out there's not enough food grown around them to feed them in the city or the suburb they're in. And that's when people are going to start dying.
Yeah, that is very true. And I hope it's not super sudden like that, but you know, it really is pointing to that it will be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just have not been addressing this. And as you've pointed out, they've suppressed any possibility. There's a funny, ridiculous article that came out a couple of weeks ago. It said backyard food production is 5 times more inefficient than commercially grown food, and it creates all this carbon. Like, okay, what, you guys, I don't know what drugs you're on. I don't want to take them because it's making you stupid. That's like, you know, ridiculous. But that's an example. You know, actually, I've learned not to dispel ridiculous, because, like, for example, Klaus Schwab, when he first came out, and I thought, oh, that guy, so funny. He looks like he's cast in a Superman movie to be the villain. And he was surrounded by all these third world country leaders that I'd never even heard of before. Yeah, now look at where they are, right? So you should never dispel the ridiculous just because it's absolutely ridiculous. So anything can happen. But yeah, we've all experienced, you've experienced it now, where they make you wait in line for hours to get into the grocery store. And the food chain is a very, very vulnerable thing. It can collapse at any point in time. And slowly, slowly, like the million acres in Texas, or the, you know, the flooding over in Georgia just before they were going to harvest the peanuts, or, you know, this food processing facility that just got burned down. You know, it's just like a jingle block game, right? They take this one out, they take that one out, and they take this one out. And at some point, the whole thing is going to collapse. So,
you know, you brought that up. I forgot. I was following, and a lot of people think he's crazy and everything, but Ice Age Farmer was talking about all the fertilizer plants that were blowing up. All the food production plants were just blowing up or catching on fire. And he 100% believed, and he was pretty accurate. He was mapping everything out, and you're like, that's insane amount of food production or fertilizer that is
going to be going offline.
Yeah, going offline for a period of time.
That was Christian Westbrook, and I used to love that guy. And the last couple of conversations I've had with him were pretty cryptic, and he said he had to leave the United States suddenly. And I'm like, really? Are you under any pressure? And he said, well, I really can't talk about it, but and I've just got to go. So I'm like, okay. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah. Well, I think he shut his channel down. I don't know if he's still producing content or not.
He's not. He's been shut down for a couple of years. In fact, So another real good one to follow now, though, is David Dubine. He's also, his channel is Adapt 2030, but he's also Ice Age farmer. He's talking about the cycles and that we're headed into an ice age, actually, which is totally contrary to the current narrative of global warming. During those cycles, there's less and less sunlight because it's a natural sunlight cycle, and there's going to just be less food production just because there's less, energy hitting the earth all over the place on top of all this other stuff they're doing. So we are really headed into some interesting times, and I think it's already really interesting. But it's what astonishes me is if you really want to be sound asleep, there's a lot of people.
Yeah.
We're still sound asleep. And I'm like, wow. Somebody asked me. Somebody said, hey, Marjorie, what's your favorite way to red pill? And I'm like, I don't red pill anybody. If they don't see it by now,
right,
they're just going to have to wait until their chain gets yanked, because I'm not, all I do is come across as negative, and it's too big of a conversation. They can't believe it. I'm like, look, if you don't understand now, then I'll we'll be friends, and I'll try to help you as much as I can, but I'm going to actually invest my energy and time into helping people who do understand what's going on and really help them, as we really are headed into a very difficult time. And a lot of these really, really simple skills are just super important and crucial, actually, for your survival.
So while we talk about this, I got more questions, but if you're interested in this series and when it's being released, if you go to preppernet.com/skills, that will forward you right there. You don't have to use, that's an easy domain, but preppernet.com/skills. And then once you sign up, you'll get reminders. Then the series will be, you can view the series, I guess, as it's released live. And
these are running. They're streaming on those 2 days, and then and of course we will bundle them up and make you an offer to sell you the whole bundle.
Of course, you can buy it,
because really people used to give me a hard time about, like, look, this I have to pay my team,
right?
Like, absolutely. Has mortgages, you know what I mean? We got to do that, right? So, and it took years. Actually, decades in some cases to really get that information and condense it down. And, it's curated. There's a lot of stuff on YouTube. And honestly, a lot of it is just outright like, oh my God, I can't believe you guys are telling people that, just please don't.
Well, I know you, and you're going to get the experts, and you've known them probably 20 plus years, all of them. And they're probably the best in their field. And you've probably gathered them together to teach these skills that, I tell people all the time, we just need the skills our great grandfolks had. Mm-hmm. So there have been tough times in America, the Civil War. I mean, and the people knew how to grow their way or figure out where the food was and harvest the food. We have no clue right now. You take a city guy and you put him in the woods, he's going to cry like a baby. He's not going to know that what you can eat, what you can't eat, have no clue on how to trapping animals or even what animals to shoot. I mean, or that even skill how to is use just a knife. Gone.
Yeah. How to even use a knife or to butcher small game, or, Yeah.
He's going to be texting Uber. I need an Uber.
I remember reading a book in, I think it was written in the 70s, and this guy went around and interviewed a bunch of people who had lived through the Great Depression. And he wrote a book talking about their experiences and what they did and all that. And often he would ask him at the end, and this is in the 70s, mind you. He said, what do you think if that happened now? How do you think this population would handle it? And he goes, most of them by and large just shook their heads and said, they aren't. This is going to be a complete disaster because nobody has any basic skills anymore.
Right.
Yeah. So I teach these, and I want you to learn them. So I traveled to Cuba. They went through a huge collapse, a really sudden collapse, like boom, the last Soviet ship pulled out of Havana Harbor. The economy plummeted by 60%. The lights went out. The water stopped running. The average Cuban lost about 20 pounds. I mean, we're talking about starvation, really hard times. And I went there to talk to them and interview them. And you know what pulled them through? Was, there was enough crazies, in every neighborhood of somebody who grew their own food and had seeds and knew how to do it. So all of a sudden the lawyers and the, financial dudes who had been on the top of the social chain suddenly went completely down to the bottom, and their gardeners rose up to the top. And those people, became leaders in their neighborhoods and in their communities and said, look, this is how you do it. Don't run over that. That's a very valuable thing, that's what pulled them through. It was backyard food production and people teaching people. And that's part of the reason that I really want people to learn these skills, is because we need you. We need you to be equipped, and we need you to be a leader in your neighborhood and in your community, because we're headed into that time period. We need you to stand up, and you know it. You're watching this. You're listening to Forrest. You know what's going on in the world. You have a good sense of it. You need to be prepared to be a leader as this thing comes apart.
Right. Your community needs you. But if you're not prepared, if you don't have the skills, you are the community.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what we talk about survival groups and PrepperNet. We talk about community groups. But when it comes down to a slow kind of SHTF, or the food supply just kind of evaporates over time, the hardest thing is the initial jolt when people go to the grocery store and go, hey, where's my Twinkies? Where can I get my Diet Colas? Where's all the bread? And they're not going to have even the skills to make bread, even if there's wheat around available. The corner.
Yeah.
They just don't, all the skills are gone. And so thank goodness for people like yourself that kind of was pushing this preparedness community, saying, hey, we got to get back to these old skills. And I would say that, the most, there's always a mixed blessing out of everything, but COVID in a sense did bring us more people that are thinking the way we're thinking now. It kind of helped.
Yeah.
In the long run, it's going to help America.
Yeah. They're all like, whoa, I just realized that my government is out to kill me.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, those crazy conspiracy theorists. What is it? Hashtag Alex Jones was right, was the leading Twitter thing for a while there, Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I agree. And right now, I call it a slow grind, right? Mm-hmm. Like we're in this slow grind and prices are going up, and people are complaining about them, but they can still afford stuff. And yeah, there's things missing here and there, but there's still enough something else there, and then it's just, the war keeps, the wars, they keep escalating. The latest, as we're recording this, is Iran has said if the U.S. interferes at all when they attack Israel, then they're going to attack, right? All these wars, by the way, throughout history are the global cult. They set the sides up against each other. Like they are totally, they set this whole thing up. Almost every war, probably every war in human history that we know of has been orchestrated by this group. So anyway, it's kind of this slow grind time right now. And I got to tell you, even myself, sometimes I'm like, it's beautiful and I'm feeling great and the perfect weather. And, you know, and I'm like, why am I worried about anything? Right. You know, right? I'm even, you know, there's still family members that I'm still kind of alienated from, and definitely a bunch of them that got vaxxed when I said, please don't do that. And
you know, I went by the grocery store today and I bought bananas. So you know what? This food thing, it really is not affecting me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When people can't get food, there'll be issues. And I guess the toilet paper preppers, I mean, when they couldn't get toilet paper, they're like, oh my gosh, what is going on? So there is going to be coming a food shortage. We know that there's a war on food. There's a war on farmers. There's a war on pretty much even, you know, Agenda 2030, I guess it is now, that they want everyone.
Yeah, right. It was Agenda 2021, and now it's Agenda 2030, and they're trying to reduce the population by 90%.
And they want everyone to live in the city.
They tell you their plans. Like, I'm not just making this up. This is written. This is communicated.
Yep.
Over and over again, they talk about, even Bill Gates will talk about it on television when he's interviewed, and many of the other, Bezos, all of them, they'll talk about it. This is something that is their agenda. Mm-hmm. So it's a crazy, crazy time. You're right. I think the shock is going to come when the average American is, you know, suddenly really can't afford to eat anymore. You know, back in, I think it was, when was it Iran or Iraq? I'm not like always big on these wars, but it was in the early 2000s. And I was just kind of becoming politically aware. And I'm like, this is nonsense. You know, they don't have nuclear weapons or whatever we were going in there for. Like, we were going in there because they were going to sell oil and dinar, like,
right,
instead of U.S. dollars, and they were going to destroy the U.S. dollar hegemony. Why doesn't everybody see this? I mean, I don't even normally look at that kind of stuff. And I'm like, why aren't Americans out in the street rioting? And I thought, well, actually, that's a really good question. Like, why? What causes people to riot? And so I started doing a little searching. On the internet, or in those earlier days. Anyway, there's a group called the Institute for Complex Systems, and they published a paper on an MIT journal, which I happened to stumble in. You know, when you have a question in your mind and you focus on it, then the universe will bring you the answer. It's really wonderful that way. I'm so glad the universe still works. Right? You know, even in these crazy times, the universe still works. But this Institute for Complex Systems, they said, what causes riots? And being the Institute for Complex Systems, they thought it was going to be a whole bunch of variables. It turned out to be just one variable, and that was the price of food. So when the price of food gets above a certain level and the average man can't feed his children, that's when he'll go out into the plaza and douse himself with gasoline and light a match, you know, or pick up arms or, you know.
There was a great video on YouTube. I think it was called something like 9 Meals or Away from Anarchy or something like that.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah.
And the guy went through history about when food production or food trucks stopped rolling. People just went nuts within like 72 hours. So
yeah, that's what the European farmers are revolting about. And they're like, we're done with this government. This government has hosed us over. And so we're just going to stop producing food, and then eventually the people will uprise and, you know, they'll get rid of this government. That's the only thing that they can do. And they're doing it. And we're slowly watching that same pattern roll out here in the U.S. Though it was interesting, in the EU, they used different tactics in each country. It wasn't the same legislation. They came up with different ways to suppress them. So, and it looks like they're going to try and use this avian flu here in the U.S. I don't know. But it's happening. It's real. We are at war, which is, it's just a thing.
So this series starts April 27th and 28th. Is that correct?
Yeah. That's a weekend. Yeah. And you can sign up ahead of time. That'll be great. Yeah. We'll remind you. I love reminders personally. Like, if somebody doesn't send me like 5 reminders, I'm not making it to the meeting.
So go to preppernet.com/skills. Go ahead and sign up. You'll be in the chain to make sure you won't forget that. And you'll be reminded. And this is, I mean, this is the skills you need. Why it's free. It's on a weekend. So, you know, you need to be a part of it, and you need to one, watch it, take notes and learn from it. And two, you need to support the people that are trying to bring you the skills that you don't have. And they're going to teach you the skills. And like you said, people can sign up and get, I'm sure, other products. They're products that people are talking about. So everyone go to preppernet.com/skills. It's just an easier URL. You can get there. You'll sign up. You'll put your email. You don't have to put anything else in there. You don't have to put your kids' names, your credit cards, or your chicken names.
We don't track you.
And you've been doing this for years, so everyone knows that you know your emails are like the best emails anyway, because the emails, when you get a Grow Network email, there's always education information in there. I mean, that's why I like getting them. But that is coming April 27th. Any final things you want to say?
Thank you so much for asking. I will say, you know, that night in Red Rock, Texas, at the community center, when I was violently shaking when I realized that, you know, that whole nine meals thing is not only real, but actually very possible. And it changed my life, right? I had said, I've got to learn how to grow food, and I've got to teach other people how to grow food, and we have to mitigate whatever brings this disaster on. I am so grateful for that night, because growing food has been the most wonderful thing in my life. It really has. You know, I mean, every morning I spend, maybe half an hour outside, and I'm checking on the plants, and I'm checking on the rabbits, and I'm greeting the sun and feeling the wind and, you know, looking at the clouds and got my hands in the dirt. And, you know, electronics and all that doesn't mix. So there's no cell phone out there. And it is the most enjoyable part of my day. And in fact, you know, if I get stressed out, which does happen, you know, this business is pretty insane. Mm-hmm. You know, if I get too weirded out, I'm like, okay, well, let me go plant something. Let me go build something. Let me go outside. And it has been the best thing ever. Like, I know what I'm looking at here. We're in the apocalypse, right? We are in the apocalypse. And I know I have a very good idea of how horrible it could get, but I feel very calm and secure because I know that I can grow food. I know that I can preserve food. I know that I can be a valuable service to people in my community. And there's just this security and confidence and calmness that comes to that. So I'm so grateful that mm-hmm. that happened to me, you know, like it was horrible at the time. And that'll be the same for everybody, every one of you. When you start growing food and you start reclaiming your own ability to connect with the earth and produce directly with your own hands in the soil, magical things happen. And
peaceful. I mean, your war, you will forget about the war with your employees at work, and your war becomes against bugs or against the heat. They're little wars that you enjoy because you learn, instead of, I mean, the little problems with you have with your gardens and everything. And so, I mean, I learned so much. I think I built a rain barrel system for my garden. And I did. And I remember learning so much from your videos. And the good thing is, it's almost like riding a bike. I can literally get on a bike now and ride it, but
yeah,
I probably have forgotten a lot of things with garden. You do have to, it is a skill you need to refine and get better at over time.
Yeah. And every year brings new yes. learnings, but it's wonderful. You know, it's alive and it's delicious, and you will,
you can eat your fruit.
You will heal from whatever you got. If you got diabetes or heart disease or whatever, growing your own food, you will heal. You will have, the more you heal the earth will heal you. And it's not just eating the good products. It's the process, being outside, relaxing. Yes. So it's just really a wonderful activity. You'll look back and you'll go, when I made that decision to start growing my own food, that was the best thing I did. And, you know, like that changed my life, and it was wonderful. So, Yeah, that's what I'd like to leave people with. You know, we're all a little daunted. That's another program, right? If you watch, next time you see a farmer in a movie, the farmer's going to be portrayed as an idiot. You know, right. Next time you see a sitcom and somebody's gardening, they're going to be portrayed as a doddering old, you know, a senile somebody, right? They never show the joy or the accomplishment or the wonder that because they don't want us growing our own food. They don't want you completely dependent on the systems that they have so that you'll get that chip in your body or you'll take that vaccine or you'll go to that camp or do whatever it is that they want to do to you.
Well, thank you so much for your time. This has been a wonderful podcast. I mean, I can't wait to share this and get this out, but thank you for your time. Thank you for everything you've done in the community. And I think that's, I mean.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Forrest, for letting me get to talk to your community. And I'll be in the comments all that weekend and would love to get to know you. And I believe we're going to have a live Ask Me Anything or something. So I definitely, you know, want to know people. I'm more about community, right? We're about, yep. And it really is us. We're humans fighting for humanity. So this is, it's much more than just, it's definitely way more than just a business. This is a passion and it's a purpose and it's essential for a future that's wonderful. And I really think that the future can be wonderful once we get through this.
Yes. Well, thank you for your time. Hey, everyone. Thank you for joining me on the Prepping Academy. There'll be all kinds of links in the show notes. And you guys have a great, wonderful day. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for listening to the Prepping Academy podcast. Preppers unite at www.preppingacademy.com.
Are you a prepper or homesteader looking to connect with like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own preparedness group? Already have a group? Well, look no further than PrepperNet. PrepperNet is dedicated to personal responsibility, individual freedoms, and being self-reliant. PrepperNet has monthly meetings in over 100 cities where you can meet and learn with like-minded people in your area. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Find us online at PrepperNet.com.